I'm Karen Hartglass, and welcome to part two of today's program of It's All About Food on March 26, 2013. All right. Now, to the delicious portion of our program. The first part was defiant, and the second part is delicious. I'm going to welcome on the show Elizabeth Holy, who writes about the food, agriculture, arts, and crafts of the upper Tiber Valley, where she has resided for the past 20 years. She is a member of the Slow Food Alta Umbria and the International Association of Culinary Professionals. Welcome, Elizabeth, to It's All About Food.
Thank you, Karen.
So we're going to be talking about your lovely little book, Sustenance Food Traditions in Italy's Heartland. And how lucky are you to live there?
I am very lucky.
What brought you to Italy 20 years ago?
Several friends. Well, I've always loved Italy. I grew up on a farm in Contra Costa Valley and here in California. And I'm in California now for this big IACP conference that's going to be happening in a week or so. Friends had this idea of restoring an old farmhouse, and several of us got together, and we did it. And they needed a manager, so I went over. I became the manager. I became a cook with an Italian guy, and became a gardener, and eventually the cooking led to the farms, and I started doing culinary tours for classes, and so one thing led to another, and I'm still there 20 years later.
Well, when we think about food, when we go in our minds to areas in Europe like Italy or the southern part of France, there's a lot of romance involved, a lot of beautiful images, and I certainly get that feeling in this book.
Thank you.
There's a lot of, I mean, it's just such a gorgeous area. And when we talk about food, very often we think it's so important to go back to the way things were. And I don't know if that's entirely a good thing. I think there are some things that we did well whenever, long ago, in different parts of the world, and some things we're doing good now, and it's good to take some of it, take the good, and leave the rest behind. But I love the artisans, the craft that are involved in growing food and making some of the food products, and the art, the love that's involved with it, the romance, the beauty, and we're going to talk about some of those things.
Well, in fact, I love those things too, and I dedicated the book to the farmers because where I grew up, it was a beautiful farmland, and just in the last 20 years, it's all changed. It's now under asphalt, and our country road is lined with strip malls. So I just don't want that to happen to this area of the upper Tiber Valley. This is actually starts where the Tiber begins, from a little stream in the mountains above the valley, and extends down to right just north of Perugia, where I live. And so this is the area that I'm talking about in the book, called the Upper Tiber Valley. And a lot of the traditions still exist. There are some wonderful foods that have always been loved there, and sometimes they're now created with a modern twist. You know, some of the younger people have some new ideas. It's definitely an area for vegans. If people want to come and visit, a vegan will be happy there. Although they do have traditions of hunting and, pork and lamb and lots of vegetables, grains, and also foods that just grow wild.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I know in this book you talk about a lot of things. You talk about a lot of wonderful plant foods, and you also talk about how some of the animals are raised for meat and for eggs and for cheese. I lived in the south of France for 4 years in Aix-en-Provence, and it was a really wonderful time. And I lived as a vegan there, and some people were really surprised to hear that. But it's an area like where you're from where people love fresh plant food.
Right.
And, you know, when it's packaged and it comes from a hothouse somewhere or it's out of season and it has no taste, people aren't interested in that. It's
right.
fresh
fact,
and it's seasoned.
In fact, you can't buy broccoli in the summer. What we call broccoli calabrese is what we call here in the States. We call it just plain broccoli. And a lot of vegetables that are definitely winter vegetables are not available in the summertime. And then you have your real seasonal things like fava beans and artichokes and asparagus and wild asparagus, too, in the spring. Then you have all your wonderful summer vegetables in the summer. And then the fall brings on, which is basically September through November, you have wine, chestnuts, truffles, mushrooms, you know, peppers are actually late summer, early fall. And so it's so seasonal, and you just simply don't buy those things, and you look forward to the arrival of the broccoli in the winter,
yeah.
and the cauliflower, and the black cabbage, the cavolo nero. So, and this area is a lot like Provence, and the people are very similar to very warm. You always hear things about other people in France who are not
I always tell people, don't go to Paris, go to the Provence.
Exactly.
That's where you'll fall in love. Yeah.
Well, a lot of the people from this area also worked in Provence. I think there's a real connection there. They worked in Nice after the war. So I think there's, they felt at home there.
It's something that we don't have in the United States. Either we never had it or we lost it, and some people are trying to bring it back. But it's really this love of what comes from the earth and to nurture it and
right.
the gifts that we get back from it. It's the simplest things, but it's what really speaks to our soul, the food that nurtures us and takes care of us. And so it's great to have a little book like this and know that there are places where these things exist, where we might visit, where we might get inspired, where we might learn.
I think it's also the community of eating. You know, we go out to wonderful restaurants. We have terrific restaurants, but we also cook a lot at home for each other. And that social life, and also with the families. You know, oftentimes you'll see three generations living together. And everyone helping each other, that still exists. And I think that's really good for health. There are people in my little neighborhood, which is really about 3 kilometers from a village. They're 90-year-olds still working in their vegetable garden, which is, and they have animals, which they use for fertilizer, you know, natural manures.
Right.
It's just a very healthy lifestyle.
Yeah. I mean, we have crazy things going on in this country and all around the world when we have these intensive factory farms where animals are crammed inside warehouses and they produce so much excrement. You just can't spread it around. There's not enough earth to spread it all around. It's just horrible. And of course, it's filled with all kinds of antibiotics and all kinds of chemicals. And these animals are fed horrible things. That's not the kind of manure we want to spread on our garden.
No.
But what they're doing where you are is what nature intended.
Right. And then there are also, people are taking, some of these traditional products, too. For example, chestnuts. There's one family that's up in the mountains near the birth of the Tiber up in Monte Fumaiolo. It's actually in Emilia-Romagna. The area around the Upper Tiber Valley includes Emilia-Romagna, Le Marche, Tuscany, and Umbria. And this one family has hired retired pensioners to go out in the forest, or they're doing it anyway. They're going out and collecting berries and wild apples and chestnuts and herbs, and they bring them back and they sell them to this family who are transforming them into very interesting, into nice products. A lot of them having to do with chestnut. They make marmalades and things like chestnuts with a cocoa or rum, and chestnuts and brandy and biscotti. It's something to give the pensioners a job too, and exercise. So
mm-hmm.
Anyway,
it.
They've created this wonderful little business, and there's a lot of that. There's a lot of entrepreneurial businesses going on that are, you know, incorporate the whole family. And some of the young people are very well educated, and so they're bringing new skills and new information and how to market. So it's a very interesting phenomenon, the fact that some new younger people are also becoming interested in farming.
I just want to talk about chestnuts for a little bit longer. I love chestnuts, and it's not something that we see enough of in this country. You can find some jarred chestnuts in stores and the vanilla sweetened canned chestnuts.
Mm-hmm.
And in the wintertime here in New York City, there are even vendors that are selling roasted chestnuts, which
right.
is really delightful. But other than that, we don't use them enough, and they are so delicious and can be used in savory and sweet dishes. You even have a recipe in here that is vegan for
right.
rustic chestnut flour cake.
Very traditional. It's not for everyone. It's a little heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It has olive oil and rosemary in it, mm-hmm. and raisins, sultanas, and
pine nuts.
It's kind of a pie. But it's more like a bread. I've served it sort of as an antipasti, mm-hmm. antipasto.
So good.
It is really good, but it's an acquired taste. No, actually, several recipes in here are acquired taste.
Oh, why? Some people
don't
like
traditional.
It. Do some people not like it?
Well, it can make you a little gassy.
Oh, okay.
but the back to the chestnuts of one of the little towns in this area was called Caprese Michelangelo, and it's where Michelangelo was born. But its special chestnut is called the Marrone of Caprese Michelangelo, and it was awarded the Denominazione di Origine Protetta. It's called the DOP by the European Union, and this means that it was unique in respect to its geographic location, the climate, the way it's been crafted into food. And the Marrone is a larger and sweeter chestnut. And this has been a huge honor for this little town. And they collect them in October. And they have a wonderful festival, and there are many chestnut festivals in this area and throughout Italy, and I'm sure you had them in France,
mm-hmm.
too. The chestnut flour was milled into flour. The chestnut was dried and roasted and milled into flour. And it contained a lot of water, so it spoiled easily, and so you had to do it very carefully. And so this chestnut flour is usually just sold in the wintertime before Christmas, you know, sometime between October and Christmas. You see it in the winter, but it does spoil quickly because it has a lot of water in it. So this, again, is a really seasonal product.
Well, that's probably why we don't see it very much, because
yeah.
it spoils.
I know a friend here sent for some, and it wasn't as good as what we get over there.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, and I'm wondering right now where I might get it.
I'll bring you some next
time. No, there you go.
Next winter.
Okay, that's a deal. But in the meanwhile, I'll just have to imagine. Okay.
Yes.
So then, of course, there's olive oil. And I want to say a few things about olive oil, because I was just having a conversation before this show started. I love good olive oil. I mm-hmm. have to say that I eat very little oil in my diet. I don't think oil mm-hmm. is really a healthy thing to eat, and I know there's a lot of talks about the Mediterranean diet and olive oil, but I think mm-hmm. when we have it, it should be phenomenal.
Yes.
And fruity and fragrant. And when I lived in Europe, even the less expensive oils were better than some of the olive oils I find in the United States. Not quite sure why that is.
I have my opinion is that it's oftentimes older than it should be. At least a year ago or 2 years ago, I was part of an olive oil panel, and the people here in California were saying that they don't label the date. At least 2 years ago, they weren't doing that. They always date the olive oil in Italy, and they tell you when it's been harvested. So the best is in the first year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fact. And so people buy their olive oil in around January when it's all been bottled, and that's when I buy mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I have fabulous olive oil. I buy it from the same man I've bought it from for years, and it's just fabulous. And he is very, very careful about how he grows it and presses it. And also, it's only from one area. He gets together with his neighbors because they have to have a certain quantity in order to take it to the press to get a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all grow it in the same area, and they all know each other and know how each other works. And I think that has a lot to do with it. It's really a small production.
Right. So it has to be fresh.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. There's nothing like wonderful, wonderful, fruity, fragrant olive oil.
I'll have to bring you some of that, too.
Okay, so now let's talk about mushrooms. I love mushrooms. And, in the supermarkets here, we don't get a big variety. Although, as Americans become bigger foodies, we're seeing a little more interesting variety.
Mm-hmm.
But I always saw phenomenal mushrooms in Europe, either served in the restaurants or in the stores, and there's a whole tradition to growing and harvesting and finding mushrooms.
Mostly in our area, it's finding mushrooms. People don't really grow them. You see, regular standard white button mushrooms over there, and you see oyster mushrooms in the stores. But like in our big co-op grocery store, but the ones that are the best are the porcini, which come in October, usually the first couple of weeks of October. And then there's one, my favorite, that's in the book. It's called an ouli, which is, I forget the name. It's an orange mushroom. It's very precious. And I have the name of it here, but anyway, it's in the book. Cesaria, I think it's like Caesar, Amanita Caesaria or something like that. But those are found, and people go mushroom hunting all the time. In fact, people will dash off, leave work early on in the afternoon if it's been raining the day before and the sun is out. Everything is coming up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a wonderful thing to do and very, very popular in our area. Usually they grow around oak trees, and if you there are many, many different kinds of mushrooms in our area. And you have to be very, very careful. Once in a while, people do die from eating them, from the wrong ones. But you take them to your pharmacist to check them out if you have any problems. And also at our fairs during that season, there will be a display of mushrooms, which are the good and which are the bad. So people are, it's part of the education of the local people.
Now, is this just in your area that you can take mushrooms to a pharmacist? And I could never imagine. I could never imagine taking a mushroom to my local pharmacist here in New York. That they would look at me like, "What? What?"
No, it's only, but it's all over Italy, and I would think it would be in France too.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but I didn't go very often to the pharmacist when I was in France, fortunately. But I do remember the once or twice when I did go, they were very knowledgeable and very friendly and rather comforting to know that they were there, and had a very different feeling than when I would go into a chain drugstore here in the United States.
Well, they're very, there's more of an interest in homeopathic.
Right, that was it.
Medicinal herbs, too. And we have herboristi. We have, you know, like in my town, we have maybe three different herbalists who you can go in and get advice from, and they sell natural foods as well as different herbs, dried herbs.
One of the things I loved living in the south of France was walking through some of the fields and woods, and there would be thyme just growing mm-hmm. everywhere, or rosemary, lavender, mm-hmm. and just not in fields, but just wild. It was the it was the most delicious, wonderful thing to be walking
right.
with the warm sun, and it would almost toast these flavors into the mm-hmm. air. What
yeah,
do you
we have? Borage.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what do you have in your area?
We have borage, chicory, purslane, a lot of purslane, sow thistle, dandelion.
Dandelion. I remember we used to forage for dandelion leaves in Europe and make mm-hmm. big salads. I'd never do it here. I did it there.
We also have mentucha, which is a wild mint. And I remember one time one of our guests was saying he needed he was making a cocktail and needed some mint. He said, where could he buy some mint? And we just leaned down and picked up some for him from the lawn.
But that's the way it should be. It should just be there for us, the Garden of Eden. We should just walk out and pick the berries and the fruits and the greens.
Well, I think it is. Like over here, there's a lot of wild fennel growing. I think there is a lot around that people just don't know about.
Yeah, I like the way you did mention that in some places there might be an old fig tree or something by an old beat-up house, and you shouldn't pick the fruit because it might belong to somebody.
Well, you can pick something to munch along your your hike, but you shouldn't. But people do. It's really sad. We have an apple tree that was just full of apples this year for the first time, and I was about to take a picture of it to show the owners, and the next time I went up, they were all gone.
Oh.
So this happens, and you know, and then there are other favorite fig trees. For example, there are a lot of old fig trees out in the countryside, and for years a family has been picking those from an abandoned thing, and they sort of believe it's theirs. So if someone buys that house, you know, you have to understand that you may not have your figs every year.
Yeah.
You have to plant another one.
We have about 3 or 4 minutes left. I wanted to talk about bread and wine.
Okay. Well, bread is made without eggs there, of course. And we have a flatbread, very famous flatbread called Torta al Testo. It's a griddle bread that's made in the fireplace. It used to have ashes on top of it, and, it's just a flat bread on a stone that they flip over, and then they brush off the ashes, and that's really, such a simple old bread, but still very popular. And then wine, we have lots of wine. our area is probably not as famous for wine as a little more south, because it's a little cooler where we are. But all of Umbria's wine business is growing, and there are some new, younger people who are making wine in a more quality than quantity, as it was in the past with the old farmers. So things are coming along. The most famous wine in our area is in Montefalco, a Sagrantino wine.
Are you familiar with Quercetella?
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Is that a house?
It's a winery. It's a biodynamic vegan wine, and it's in that area. I had the owner of Quercetella on the show a while back when he was in the United States. I just wondered. It's very good.
Well, if you would send me that information or the name of the person, I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. What can we say? We just have like a minute left. Sustenance, Food Traditions in Italy's Heartland. It's a lovely book. Where can people find it?
It's from Amazon.
Oh, Amazon. Very good. And you're going back to Italy soon?
I'm going back on the 11th. I have this big IACP, International Association of Culinary Professionals, conference coming up here in San Francisco on the 6th of April. By the way, my book has been nominated for an IACP Cookbook Award for Culinary Travel.
Congratulations.
So I'm very thrilled about that.
Yeah, well, it's a really lovely, I love the pictures. I love this area so much. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. And I'm going to look forward to the olive oil and the chestnut flour. Okay. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com and have a very, very delicious week.